Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 18th of Sivan. We start with gratitude to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, David Hochhauser, for making the shiurim available and for letting us share Torah with each other. For the 18th of Sivan, we have a tshuva from Yabia Omer, from the book of tshuvot of Rabbi Avad Yosef, one of his sets of tshuvot, Chelek Chet, the 8th volume, the Eben Ezra section, Simon Chav Chet. The tshuva itself is dated to Tevet Tavshin Lamed Vav, to the month of Tevet, which is like December, January time of Tavshin Lamed Vav, so that would have been 75, 76. And we'll see at the very end of the tshuva, he makes a reference to the fact that he had paskim this way also in a tshuva for the 18th of Sivan, so we'll get back to that eventually. He's writing to Rav Yaakov Fink, who was the head of the Beis Din in Haifa, was Rav and head of the Beis Din in Haifa. And the question is about a woman who sadly her husband has passed away without children, which creates a halakhic responsibility for her to either have yibum, to either marry a brother. So if this is the 18th of Sivan, for Rosh Chodesh Sivan, I will have, by the time it's 18th of Sivan, I'll have written up a tshuva by Rav Avad Yosef also, which will be printed online in TorahMusings.com, about the fact that Rav Avad Yosef in his time, in the 70s, was willing to and encouraged others to allow Sephardim to do Yibum, to actually get married, if that's what they preferred to do, which is a whole interesting thing, because the Rabbi HaRashid of Israel, the chief rabbin of the state of Israel, in the time of Rav Uziel and Rav Herzog, had said, nope, no more Yibum. That's not our topic today, but the point is this woman needs either Yibum, but that's not what's going to happen here, because the only Yavam available, the only brother of her deceased husband, is what's called Chofshi B'de'otav, meaning he doesn't care about Torah and mitzvot, he doesn't care about keeping the Torah at all, and therefore she's not going to marry him, and it took a lot of pressure for him to agree to do a chalitza. Now, why wouldn't somebody who's non-frum want to do a chalitza? Because it's silly, right? In his mind, it doesn't have any meaning. Why should he bother wasting his time? He's not willing to. Why should he? Like people do crazy stuff, and you say to them, but it's going to help somebody else that are unfortunately not always as generous as they could be. So this man, too, he was willing to eventually decide, fine, I'll do it. But the condition was it has to be done right away because he has to take a business trip to a faraway place that he goes to often for business. And if we're talking about in the mid-70s, it's going to take him time to get there. He's going to be there for a while, time to come back, and maybe he'll never come back. Maybe he'll be there for a year, for 2 years. Who knows how long the trip is. She wants, therefore, to get her chalitza so she can think about remarrying because she's just in this terrible situation. But it hasn't yet been 3 months since her husband passed away. So we're going to see, much of the shiva is going to be about that whole idea that a woman has to wait 3 months after her husband passes away before she can have a chalitza. So the question is, in a shat hatkak situation, so it's called a shat. Now, shat hatkak is a term that's going to come up a bunch of this tshuva. Shat hatkak is a situation where we're under some pressure to find a way to find a solution. That's a separate concept from another concept that will be prevalent in this tshuva called a bidiavad. Bidiavad means something's already occurred and you want to figure out how to react to it halachically. So sometimes we'll say you didn't do it the right way, whatever it was, but bidiavad, I'm not going to make you do it again, right? So let's say I shook a lulav on sukkahs and it turns out I shook it the wrong way. So the cost of telling me to shake it again is it means I have to go back to my room, find my lulav, pick it up and shake it again. So in those kinds of bidiavad situations, we might just say bidiavad, even though you did it, if you did it the wrong way, go back and do it again. But there are other situations where bidiavad, if halacha was you had to do it again, it would involve a lot of effort and a lot of problem, a lot of issues, and therefore there are situations in halacha where we'll say bidiavad, you don't have to do it again. Bidiavad, if it was already done, then it's good enough. Now, some people unfortunately misunderstand that to mean the bidiavad is like the second level. So if we could just tell you to do it that way, you'll also be okay. And that's not really what bidiavad means. But shat hatkak is going to be something like that. Shat hatkak will be a situation of pressure where we have difficulty for some reason keeping a halacha in the ideal way. And that's the question here. She has a shat hatkak. Why is it a shat hatkak? Because this yabam, the only one that there is apparently, and the only one who can give the chalitza to her, doesn't care that much about giving her the chalitza. If he disappears or goes away on business, he may be gone forever and then she'll never get a chalitza. So we want to know, can we do it within 3 months? So that's the question Rav Yosef is going to be dealing with. So he points out the way the Rambam in the first paragraph of Hilchos Yibum, the 19th paragraph, Halach Yitet, the way he codifies this halach is Hayivama lo tachalot ad shetamtin tishim yom miyom mitad ba'ala chus miyom mita o miyom ayibam. A woman, a widow, can't have yibum or chalitza. She can't do either procedure until she's waited 90 days. And those 90 days have to be a full 90 days, by which I mean that the day of her husband's passing doesn't count as part of the 90 days, and the day of the yibum or the chalitza also doesn't count. So it's got to be 90 days between the two events, at least. And the reason the Rambam gives for the fact that she can is, nishena ruya li yibum, she's not available for yibum. It's not a plausible reality. It's not a, she's not, riyah in English often means worthy, but it doesn't mean worthy. It means, sort of means not qualified for yibum. The reason she's not qualified for yibum is because she might be pregnant. It's a parenthesis that Rav Yosef puts it. She might be pregnant, and if she's pregnant, she doesn't need yibum. Meaning a man passes away, sadly, right? This happened after 9/11, for example. I knew a couple where they didn't have children. Man passed away, so you'd think she needs a yibum or a chalitza, but in fact, she doesn't because she's pregnant. She's pregnant, she has a child. So if she's pregnant, the child isn't born, she needs a yibum or a chalitza. But it depends when the child is lost, I think, actually. I'm not sure. I think the child has to actually be born. But if she's pregnant, she can't have a yibum. So therefore, in these 3 months, we think maybe she's pregnant. And that's what we're worried about. That's what we're concerned about. And the reason why the chalitza has to be there. So you say that could be true. I could say that for yibum because she's not allowed to yibum. But chalitza, the brother's not marrying her anyway. So why not do the chalitza? Meaning, you could say to me, they can't do the yibum just in case. Let's suppose the halacha was that if she's pregnant, let's suppose they said to you, so we'll get married. What's the big deal? The answer is because if she's pregnant, they're not allowed to get married. Because if she has a child from her first husband, or she's pregnant and eventually has a child from her first husband, she's an arayot to the brother. To marry your deceased husband's brother, if you have children, that's one of the prohibited arayot relationships, prohibited sexual relationships with the Torah. So they can't do a yibum just in case, because if she's pregnant from the first husband, she's not allowed to marry this. Yes, she can't do. But chalitza, you might have thought, so what do I care if she's pregnant? If she's pregnant, it means she never needed a yibum, she never needed a chalitza, so she never needed a chalitza. But if she needed a chalitza, so she got a chalitza. So what's the big deal? So the Rambam points out that the pasuk says, im lo yachpot ha'ish lakachat. If the man, right, in the Torah's assumptions, how that works today is not going to be our issue at all, but that whole question of how Yibum does or doesn't work, or the preferences of Yibum, or then whatever, all that I'm not going to get into, but I will point out, I remember a teacher of mine, Joel Walowski, who I was very close with in high school, did very many wonderful things for me, did many favors for me in high school and beyond. Once pointing out to me, here's the chalitza, and the chalitza is where we're freeing her from having to marry him, because we don't want her to marry him. Ashkenazim prefer that people don't do yibum for reasons that I'll got into in that writing, that written up version of the Rosh Chodesh Sivan Tshuva. So we want her to get with the chalitza is really about freeing her and letting her marry somebody else. But you bring a brother-in-law into the room, and the ceremony follows the Torah's prescription for the ceremony. The Torah's prescriptions, the man was supposed to do yibum, that was the preference. So we look down on a man who won't do yibum for his sister, for his sister-in-law, for his deceased brother's wife. So we look down and we spit in his direction and we say terrible things about him. And so Dr. Walowski pointed out to me many years ago that unless you translate it for the guy or explain it to him, it's a little nebuch on him because he's getting all this abuse heaped on him for doing a chalitza when he should be doing a yibum, when we wouldn't even allow him to do a yibum even if he wanted to. That's the point here, though. The reason the Rambam quotes the pasuk is because then she takes off his shoe, which does the whole ceremony. But the point is, from the way the Torah expresses it, in lo yachpot ha'ish lakachat et eshet achiv, I think. If the man doesn't choose to, that tells us that it has to be a woman called she'ola liyibum ola lachalitza. It's got to be a woman who's available for yibum. I don't mean available. So today, Ashkenazic women aren't really available for yibum because Ashkenazic practice is not to allow yibum. But that's not what we mean here. We mean she has to technically be available in halachic terms. So if she's still in her 3-month period where she might be pregnant and therefore she couldn't have a yibum in case she's pregnant and therefore an arayot, a sexually prohibited woman to this brother-in-law, then she can't have a chalitza either. In the case of chalitza, you could say to yourself, but there's no damage to doing a chalitza. That's true because, like I said before, there's no damage to doing a chalitza because either she needs a chalitza when she got a chalitza, or she doesn't need a chalitza, in which case it's a meaningless ceremony. But the answer is, chalitza doesn't work. Chalitza isn't relevant unless she could have possibly had yibum in a theoretical halachic sense. So if, then the Rambam says, if they had a yibum in 3 months, or a chalitza within 3 months, and she's not pregnant, it turns out she's not pregnant, Then it works. That's what he says. So that's a bidiyavad, for example. That's a bidiyavad situation. They weren't supposed to do it. They weren't supposed to have, meaning, Let's say they're Sfaradim and they're allowed to have Yibum and they decide, yes, we want to have Yibum. So they do Yibum, they don't know the halacha so well, they do Yibum after 2 months, and then, you know, a year goes by and she's still not pregnant. So it'll clearly turn out she wasn't pregnant from her first husband, she hasn't yet got pregnant from the second husband, right? So it turns out she needed Yibum. The Yibum was a valid, what was a good Yibum, but she did in the time what she wasn't supposed to do. So the answer is, they dodged the bullet. They took a risk they shouldn't have. They're not supposed to. They took a risk that they were committing an act, which is Kayev Karis, which is a Karis prohibition in the Torah, but didn't work out that way, and therefore it worked. So that's the setting in the Rambam. B'diavad, they're not allowed to do it. They're not allowed to do the Yibum because she might be pregnant. If she's pregnant, she's an Arayo to this brother-in-law. She has a, it's a prohibited sexual relationship. Because she's not allowed to Yibum, it means she's not an Olala Yibum. She's not available for Yibum. She's not available for levirate marriage. Then Chalitza is an irrelevant procedure because the way the Torah expresses it, we understand that Chalitza is only possible as a ceremony with any meaning if she's available for Yibum. However, that halacha that we just said is apparently halacha lechatchila, which doesn't mean it's the ideal way to do it. It means that's the way to do it. If it turns out they did it another way, then it could also take effect. The source for that, says Rav Yosef, is the Gemara in Yevamot, Daf Mem Aleph Amud Bet, where there's a discussion about a man who does it in the wrong time window, and we say there, Mati Rav Chinen, and Rav Chinen raises the question, is Asfekot Kol Etzot V'lo Mit Yemot. If you have a question about whether a woman needs Yibum or not, then we do Chalitza and not Yibum. Umay Asfekot Kegon Shekidei Shechai Mishtei Achayot Ve'eino Yodea Ezo V'Katani Chol Etzot. So the question there is, the Rav Chinen quotes a source that says that if you have women whose Yibum status is uncertain, so the example would be the brother had married one of two sisters, but we don't know which of two sisters, and apparently they don't know which, or they can't, or we can't trust their testimony. There's some reason why we don't know. We don't know which of the two sisters it is. So in those situations, we say you can't do a Yibum, you have to do a Chalitza. So the specifics of that halakha aren't our issue right now, because what we care about is that it seems to be that those are women who you can't do a Yibum, and yet you do a Chalitza. Yet the Rambam, the halakha we just said a second ago was, since during the three-month window, the woman, the widow, can't have Yibum, she can't have Chalitza either. And yet we just showed you an example. If you have women, you don't know which woman was actually the brother's sister, which woman was the brother's wife, then you can't do Yibum. You can't do Yibum to both of them because they're sisters. You can't marry both of them. You can't do Yibum to one because then you can't do Chalitza to the other, and then you might leave one of them stuck. So therefore, they have to both get Chalitza. But I don't understand. You told me if you can't do Yibum, you can't do Chalitza. The Gemara says, Hachi Hashta. It's not the same thing. If, this is what the Gemara says, if Elio were to come, Elio is the source of information that regular human beings don't have, if Elio were to come to say, I know which sister it was this sister, what would you do? She could have Chalitza, she could have Yibum, because we have well-established information about whether or not you can do Yibum. So, Hachayim Yivo Elio V'yomar Tilo Yabra Mi Mashkechinon. So the Gemara says, but if Elio were to come and say, you know what, she's not pregnant, and an example today would be, let's say she took a pregnancy test. You know, that we knew that was work that never had false negatives. Always had, it might have false positives, never had false negatives. If it told you you weren't pregnant, you weren't pregnant. Let's say a woman took a test like that, we could say, let her have a Chalitza or Yibum already, because we know. So the Gemara is telling us, no, not a question of knowing whether she's pregnant or not. It's just a halakha that you have to wait the 3 months. For example, how do we know that that's the way the halakha was set up? Because the Gemara says, Hakatana Dulav Bat Yiburi. You can have situations, today we don't have such a situation, but you could have situations in the Gemara where a young woman, a girl, had been married, and a girl who's not able, we know, is not able to get pregnant, and yet the halacha is, she'd have to wait the 3 months before she had Yibum Chalitza. Meaning, what's more telling you is, when it comes to the pregnancy issue, the requirement to wait, even though it's theoretically about making sure she's not pregnant, it wasn't only based in reality. It was set up as a straight out halacha, as an unconditional rule. The unconditional rule is a woman has to wait 3 months afterwards, regardless of whether pregnancy is an issue. You could have the one time I've never seen a chalitza done. There was one time, I remember, I was in YU. I was learning, I think I was in Smicha still. I was still in rabbinical school, and the word went out there was going to be a chalitza in, you know, first 5:35, I think it was, and does anybody want to go see it, can go see it, and I didn't bother to go see it, which I regret. There are many things like that in my life, opportunities I didn't take that I regret, but I remember asking somebody afterwards what was the story, and it turns out it was like these two Nebuch, 85-year-old people. It was a woman and her brother-in-law, and the couple had been childless their whole lives, they never had children, and they as far as everybody knows, they lived a happy life together. He, Nebuch, passed away. She needed a chalitza. She needed a yibum, so she got a chalitza. So she also had to wait 3 months. Right? That's part of what we're talking about here. That's what the Gemara is saying. Afilo achit shichah gimel chadashim. You have a mission in Reish Perga Cholet. It says, Cholet levim tovenim tzeit me'uberen. And Tosus there says, Becholet tok shloshe chadashim. So the Tosus says, how could it happen? You told me it wasn't a chalitza within 3 months. So Mary, dinehi delav chalitza midirabanan. Asur bikrovoteha. You have a Tosus telling us that this is halacha de Rabbanan. This requirement to wait for 3 months, which was, however, set up as an unconditional halacha. It's not halacha based on the technical, realistic worry that she might be pregnant. It's a halacha that we have to act as if any one of these women could get pregnant, and therefore we're not allowed to have a chalitza within that time. But Tosus makes it very clear, if you get the chalitza in the time, it does take effect as a chalitza, and one of the ways that it shows, the Rambam said it earlier, one of the ways it shows that she doesn't need another one. Another way that it shows is that man who did the chalitza to her will now also not be able to marry whichever of the relatives of a chalitza that one is allowed to marry. There are halachos in Yavam, there's a whole bunch of halachos about if you have chalitza with a woman, you can't marry certain of her relatives either. And Tosafot points out that Gemara later on says if a woman had a chalitza within 3 months, she has to wait 3 months before she can get married. But Tosafot says, but it sounds like she doesn't need another chalitza. So that seems to the halacha, and that's what the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch seem to paskin as well, that you're not supposed to do it, but if it's done, it takes effect and it works. So the Ramah, in a comment there, quotes a more stringent opinion as the Haggadah of Mordechai at the end of Gittin, where the Ramah says there are those who say that if she has a chalitza within 3 months, then it's a chalitza psula. So a chalitza psula means it's an invalid chalitza, but it was an act of a chalitza, and that complicates her life more rather than less, because then she'll need another chalitza from all the brothers. The reason for that will be because once she has a chalitza psula, I think it's because we worry that that brother can't do the chalitza anymore, and then she has to make sure that all the brothers are out of her life. There's all discussion that we're not getting into here, but that's a halacha that comes up in several places, that she'll need a chalitza from all the brothers. That's how it goes Mordechai at the end of Gittin. So if you're going to follow that halacha, then you really need to avoid doing a chalitza within 3 months. And the Taz said we don't have to pay attention to that. He said the Hagos Mordechai seems to be following Yerushalmi, but that Yerushalmi seems to clearly disagree with our Bavli, with our Gemara, for reasons that we've spoken about, that our Gemara gives fairly clear indications that if she had the chalitza in this time period, that it is after the fact of the chalitza. And therefore, says the Taz, the halacha really follows the Rambam and the Torah and the Rashi and the Tosos and the Mechaber, and we don't have to pay to the Hagos Mordechai. Notice the Taz is willing, there, in other words, to seemingly disagree with the Rambam. We'll get to the Rambam in a second, but he's seemingly willing to disagree with the Rambam and say that no, for all the Rambam quoted the Chumrah of the Hagos Mordechai, we don't follow it. Taz also argues that even the Hagos Mordechai, who says it would be better if she got a chalitza from all the brothers, that doesn't mean the first chalitza was invalid completely. And if she can't or she didn't, it would still count. That's not clear in the Ramah, but that's what he's claiming the Yerushalmi would have said. And the Gros seems to agree that also we don't follow that opinion. And we will, after the fact, say that chalitza took effect. And the Rabbi Yosef starts quoting tshuvos, because that's what he does. He starts quoting people who agree and people who accept this ruling. So he says there's a shut called Tzapichit Dvash, and shut Tzapichit Dvash says, and how do you know what Tosos held about something? So sometimes you'll have in Tosos two answers. So some people say that the first answer is the answer that you accept, which in the case of our Tosfos would mean an answer that doesn't think the chalitza takes effect. Back in that Tosfos, that I skipped that part of it, but there are two answers in that Tosfos. So if you have a Tosfos that has two answers, there are those who say you have to follow the first answer. When Tosfos gives a second answer, it's just a possibility, but it doesn't really mean it. But the Shutz HaPichit B'Dvash says, no. You can look in at the end of every Masechet. There's a work called Piskei Tosfos that somebody came along for us. I think it was the man who wrote the Smak. I think it was being a parent in the Smak, but I'm not sure. But in the Piskei Tosfos, you can email me at grothst@gmail.com. But in the Piskei Tosfos, if they only write the second answer that there wasn't a Tosfos, that means that's the answer that Tosfos really accepted. We take that as a Psak issue. So if you look in Yevamot, the Piskei Tosfos, write simply and clearly, take it for granted that the b'di'avad im chalatz b'toch gimel eina tzricha chalitza acher. That if after the fact, if they did it and they did the chalitza, they're not going to need another chalitza. And that even the Ramah then, who brought the Hagos Mordechai, this is what I think Rav Yosef is now saying, you could, oh no, that's what Pichet B'Dvash is saying, you could say that really the Ramah agrees with the Mechaber, and the reason why I would think that is because he doesn't write about this Chumrah of the Hagolos Mordechai, he doesn't say V'cheinikar, this is the way we should act, that's the essential halacha, or V'halchi Hilchasa, V'chol ki Hagavni Yeshlom Adhavale Kistam V'yesho, Omim V'halachi Kistam. So the Sabir Rush is suggesting, in other words, that if you follow principles of Psak, this is always an interesting topic to me that I haven't really looked into nearly as much as I would like to, which is there are many times in books of halacha that they don't always write exactly the halacha or make it clear. They say, well, there's an opinion this way, there's an opinion this way, and there are rules about what they mean by that. They sort of indicate what they mean, even though they don't say it straight out. So the Tapir Rush has just invoked two of those. He said, there's the idea that if you're looking in Tosfos, you wonder what Tosfos really holds about something. And there are two answers in Tosfos. There are many people think you follow the first answer. That may or may not be true, but in situations where if you look in the Piskei Tosfot at the end of the Masechet, and the Piskei Tosfot only quotes one answer, and the answer of the Piskei Tosfot quotes is the second answer in that Tosfot, that means the Piskei Tosfot was clear that that was the real answer the Tosfot intended for us to take. That would help us in our situation, because that's the situation he's talking about, that b'dieved the Chalitza works. In addition, when you have a Ramah, he's arguing, and the Ramah comments on the Shulchan Aruch, says, yeah, but there's this halacha, that if the Ramah really means there's this halacha, and that's what we, Ashkenazim, or we, you know, Jews who follow the Ramah, should follow, Ramah will say something like, V'chein ikar over halchi hilchata. And if he leaves out those words, V'chein ikar over halchi hilchata, that's the central, that's the right way to do it, or that's the halacha, or V'chein noag, you know, that's how our practice. If he just mentions it without any of those ratifying terms, then we're allowed to assume that, in fact, he thinks that the Pesach and the Shulchan Aruch is the real Pesach. He just, for whatever reason, felt it was valuable to mention to us this other Pesach there was as well. Tamir Rosh says, that's what it seems that the Shach thinks about the standards of the Ramah, and a Prima Gadim in Klale Hora'ah of Isser V'Heter also made that assumption about the Ramah, that that's the way you understand the Ramah. So according to that, then it seems like we have a pretty good consensus. And now Rav Yosef brings in another klal. It's an interesting thing. I think one of the things that struck me about this tshuva once I was going through it was, aside from the original question, right, there is a question that is turning out to be relatively simple. The answer is, sort of, that if you end up doing the chalitza for some reason within 3 months, it works out to be okay. The question is, how can we get that to apply it to this woman, to this widow who needs it done because her free-thinking brother-in-law is going away on business for a long time? But to me, part of the interesting thing is how you have to invoke halachic principles to get to your answers, right? The halachic principle is just a general question. The general question of what? How do we know what Tosfos really thinks about something? How do we know what the Ramah thinks about something? And here's one more general principle that comes into play. It's going to be very crucial for us here. He says, we often, and this I think is part of how people get to the idea that as long as it's okay with the Eved, then if you really want to do it, you can do it, because there are many situations where we'll say there's so much dchak here, such a problematic situation, that we can treat it prospectively as a b'di'avad situation, as if it's already been done. Meaning, so people will be like, you know, if I don't want to daven now, I can daven too later. That's not true. You can only daven two later if for some reason you missed the first one. So they'll say, so they're like, well, I'm not in the mood to daven, so that's like I'm missing it. So that's not our topic today. I'm not going to get into it. But my point is that that's where people are saying, well, I want to just do the b'di'avad way because it's easier. But we're not allowed to just do the b'di'avad way. But where we're in an actual shatat kach situation, if we're in a situation of actual halachic pressure, and then you need to define what counts as shatat kach or not. Here, what counts as shatat kach is the yabam, the lever, the brother-in-law is going away. So hachinami is like a b'di'avad, especially makom igun, and that we have the risk and we have the worry that she's going to be left without any way to allow to be able to get married to anybody else because he's going to go away and she'll need the chalitza. So that helps us say, yes, she can have the chalitza within the 3 months. That's within 3 months. All the more so, he says, there's a tshuva in the Shvut Yaakov that Shadat Chak is actually, the Shvut Yaakov says, if you have a situation where there's tremendous pressure, it's very difficult to be able to keep the halacha the right way, and it's not difficult, it's basically impossible to keep the halacha the right way, that's actually better than a b'di'evid. Why does the Shvut Yaakov think it's better b'di'evid? Kaimalan, disamchinan al yachid b'shadat chak. There is a halacha that if you're in a Shadat Chak situation and there is one posek who says X way of doing something is okay, is allowed, we're allowed to rely on that. Whereas if somebody comes to me and they've already messed up a situation, they wonder if they have to do it again, and there's one posting who would say that the way they did it was okay, we don't say that. Mashik Enkein Legabe Diavat. So too, says Shri Yaakov, there's several Achronim. No, I'm sorry, that's Rabbi Yosef. There are other Achronim, he's the big collector of opinions, and since this is clearly a Shatkat situation, I think that there's room to be Matir. Another Shut Zichron Yosef, which was in the mid-1700s, there was an important Rav who was first in Alsace, like in the northern half of Alsace in his rabbinate, like near Strasbourg, and then in the south part of Alsace, and then he eventually moved to Bavaria, where he passed away in Fürth, I think, in Bavaria. So this is Rav Yosef Steinhardt, who's important Zichron Yosef, is important Shut. So he was asked about a Yevama, where the claim was it had been 3 months since the husband died. They thought the court was led to believe that 3 months had passed. They did a chalitza. Then they found out that it had not been 3 months. It had been within the 3 months. But now, so if you think of it, they said, so what the question is, the Hagolus Mordechai that you saw before, I claim that it's now chalitza psula. And the halach is, in the case of chalitza psula, she has to get a chalitza from all the brothers. And that's going to be very difficult. In the mid-1700s, the woman's poor. She doesn't have the possibility to go find men. Her brothers-in-law, her former brothers-in-law, are not all in the same place. One of them, at least, is in a very faraway place. And she's going to she's going to be stuck because she's not going to get there so fast. So the Zichron Yosef, it said, nope, the source for the Divrei HaRamah, the idea of that it's a chalitza psula, and therefore she needs another chalitza from each of her former brothers-in-law, that's actually against all the poskim. This is what Rav Yosef Steinhardt said in the 1700s. It's actually against all the poskim, who had said, no, that if she, that the only case where we'll say she needs another chalitza, that would be if she was actually pregnant. She was actually pregnant at the time she got the chalitza, and then later the baby died, so now she needs a chalitza, that will be a chalitza psula. So the klaloshel davar, nearly borrowers of the Shut Zichron Yosef, that in this case it's a shadat chak, and there's a problem with an igun, so she can get a chalitza, he says, another time from the first yebam who's here, from the brother-in-law who originally did the chalitza. Since he's here, you'll do it, and that should be good enough, even according to the Gos Memonios, the Gos Mordechai and the Ramah, that it's a, you know, it's a shadakak, so that even though they think of it as not a valid chalitza, the first one, we'll just do one more chalitza. We won't have to make her do other chalitzos. Because all the other chalitzos, he says, if it's not a shadakak, those are just a chumrah. And since it's just a chumrah, lechatchila, then you don't have to do them in a shadakak situation. So that helps, provide you safe, so that helps our permissibility for this woman, because it's clearly a shadakak. Why is it a shadakak? Because you've got the brother-in-law itching to go off, and he doesn't care so much. So he says, v'achar, and then, so they do the chalitza. Rav Yosef says they can do the chalitza. And then once she knows that it's been a full 3 months from the passing of her husband, and she knows she's not pregnant, so then it'll turn into a chalitza k'shira b'diavad. It'll be like a retroactively, and after the fact, since we had to do it that way, and it was a situation where we can't do it again in a better way, so therefore we'll say it's a valid chalitza, and she can get married to somebody else. Another situation also with Yudaleib Cyrilson, who's a shoot that we've seen before, and I've seen before in Rav Yosef's Chivot. He was an important Rav, I forget where now, but an important Rav in his time. So in World War I, he knew of a situation where, sadly, a woman, her husband passed away. She's very young, and she's so young, she's very young, and she hasn't had 3 months yet from when her husband passed away, and there's only one brother-in-law. That one brother-in-law has now been drafted into the army, and he has to leave right away. And it's World War I. So the problem was, everybody knew already in World War I that people were going away to the war. Lots and lots of them were going to die, sadly. And not only were they going to die, that would be bad, right? But worse than that, or as bad as that is, they were going to die, many people, and bodies wouldn't be found so fast. So there was a great worry that she won't know where he is, she won't know how to find him, she won't know what's going on with him, and she'll become an aguna. So he's going off to war. That's very sad for him and very nerve-wracking for him, and we can only hope he came out okay. But as he's about to leave, question, what do you do about it? So Cyrilson said, this is a shot at chak. It's really a time of great pressure, and it's a problem of maybe she'll be an aguna forever because we won't know what happened. He said, too, it's very much like a bediavad, and therefore, he says there's room to let her do a chalitza before he goes to war, and then that's what he says. That's his psak. He goes on at length about it, but that's his psak. But she can't get married until she knows that 90 days have passed from after the day that her husband passed away until the day that she gets married. So too, in Shut Beit Yitzchak, another idea. Let's say the only yavam left is a katan. So I know we don't want a minor to do a yibum. But we're also worried that something will go wrong, or they'll get separated, and they'll never have it. And also, we happen to know, for whatever reason, that the husband and wife in that situation had not had a chance to consummate the relationship, which means there's no chance that she's pregnant. So there, too, he allowed them to do a chalitza and then to wait the 90 days. Shutar Reb Samim also had a similar situation. He also allowed a chalitza, where I think the Yabam was very ill, and we were worried that... I think it was one Yabam was ill, and the other Yabam was very far away. So if the Yabam who's ill passes away, she'll be stuck because the other one's so far away, she'll have trouble getting to it. So there too, he allowed doing a chalitza, and he said if he gets better, they should do another chalitza, but you won't have to do, go find the other brother, and if he passes away, we'll rely on that chalitza, because again, Shadat Chak is like a bidyavet. Similar situation, now it's already getting us even closer to our situation, Hashim Mahariyah HaLevi, who also had a Yabam. The Yabam is a Mumar, the Yabam has left Judaism, and doesn't want to do a chalitza, and after a lot of pressure, and a lot of requests, and a lot of begging, he said, fine, and a lot of money, he said, fine, I'll do a chalitza, but we have to do it now. And it's only been 4 weeks since the brother had passed away, and there's a lot of worry that he'll just change his mind. So, and also there's rumors that he wants to travel. So this is exactly from Vayn Yosef's situation as well. So he too said, yeah, it's a Shadat Chak, it's a time of great pressure, and therefore you can do the Chalitza within 3 months. So Vayn Yosef says, in our situation, you can put all of that together along with the idea, which he had mentioned till now, that many people hold, that the Yabam is a Mumar, the Yabam has left Judaism, then there's no need for Chalitza at all, because, and this we've seen before, because we think that when she got married, if the brother-in-law was already a Mumar, I'm sorry, when she got married, she had it as an implicit condition that if I'm going to get stuck having to wait around for a Mumar to Chalitza, I'm not willing to get married. That it's a condition in the marriage that she does, that she won't be liable for Chalitza or Yibum if that situation didn't happen. So you put that into the mix, then it helps us out saying that the Chalitza can be done within the 3 months, and then she'll wait. And in all these situations, if the Yabam is still around after 3 months and he's willing to do another Chalitza, then we'll do another Chalitza. But that's just so that we can, do as well as we can. But even without that, it's a Shadat Chak, which is like a Dievet, and so to it, we're allowed to do that. I think all that might have been from this Shut, not from Rabbi Yosef himself, but from this Shut Mahariyah HaLevi, who had said that idea as well, and who agreed basically with Rabbi Yosef's point. So to the Chazon Ish, who said in the case of Igun, he said you can rely on the Ramban, who says that we can rely on a makel opinion of Rish Lakish in the Gemara, that we don't make exeret all of the 3 months in the Ramban, in situations of problematic, in situation of Igun, situation where it's going to create a situation where she won't be able to get married, and then you can follow that. And then Ravai Yosef says, and I remember that I actually passed in this halacha lemaisa. I did a case like this in my Beit Din in Yerushalayim on the 18th of Sivan of Tavshin Chaf Gimel of 1963. So this is, over a dozen years ago. And we did that halacha lemaisa, and we did it for the Beit Din in Rehovot. And then we were asked that question. We told them they could do it, and they did it. And that's halacha. So you have Ravai Yosef on the 18th of Sivan. Basically, the simple question is, could you have a chalitza within 3 months if it's a very difficult situation? The answer is yes. But to get to that solution, to get to the answer, you have to go through a couple of things to realize that, as a b'dievin matter, that chalitza is seen as valid by most poskim. To get to that idea that most poskim, you have to remember that two opinions in Tosos, we follow the one the Piskei Tosos quotes. You have to remember that when a Rama quotes an opinion, if he doesn't say v'chein hilchata, or v'hachi nagin, or v'hachi v'chein roi lasor, v'chein ikai, if he doesn't say something like that, then we can think that he also agrees with the Shulchan Aruch. And then you have to remember the very broad principle that Shatat Chak creates a different halachic reality. Times of pressure, times of problematic situations create a different halachic reality in which we might be able to allow to follow sort of prospectively, because it's always treated as if it's already retrospectively and a problem, even situations that we would ordinarily see as a b'diavad. So those are some of the issues that came up in our response today, with thanks to the OU, chaired by Jacob Bromwich and David Hochhauser, for the 18th of Sivan, allowing women to get remarried as best we can so they not get stuck. Have a great day.